Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Tina Horn, and you're listening to Why Are People Into That? The podcast for queers, sluts, perverts, whores, and everyone who loves us. It's BOGO season at the Pleasure Chest. Stock up for summer at the Pleasure Chest's one and only sale of the year. All throughout July, you can buy one and get one half off anything that vibrates of equal or lesser value in the store. Got your eye on a luxury vibe? Want to try a vibrating butt plug? Did the magic finally leave your trusty wand? Not to worry, BOGO July is the perfect time to restock or upgrade your toolbox. Invest in pleasure, gift a friend, surprise your partner, or really just treat yourself. Need some suggestions? Visit pleasurechest.com to check out the perfect pairings collection for some new and classic power couples that just go better together. BOGO is available in-store in New York City, Los Angeles, and Chicago, and online. To find out more, follow at Pleasure Chest Stores on social media or visit pleasurechest.com. And now, on with the show.
And then the one that you did the first few chapters of for Four Chambers is...
Story of the Eye by George Bataille.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So what was that like? Is that the only time that you've made porn based on a book?
Yes.
Cool.
I know.
People should do that more.
Yeah, Caden Cross does Anais Nin stories.
Hell
sometimes.
Yeah. Oh, that's hot.
So good. It was.
Where can people find that?
As of a year ago, if you went to Trenchcoat X, you could find that series wide open.
Cool. So you co-founded Trenchcoat X, and that's a membership site that I often recommend to people when they want a recommendation of a place where they can watch really hot porn, where they can subscribe to a site that has like a pretty good variety of a lot of porn.
Yeah.
Produced by different people, featuring different people, that is like made by sex workers who are invested in making really great erotic short films that you can jerk off to.
Yeah.
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 For people to support.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
And we'll come back to the subject at hand, but you're doing something similar with Zero Spaces now?
So Zero Spaces is like the elevator pitch is if Playboy took sexuality as seriously as they take everything else.
Love that. Reading it for the articles, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So we have the second issue. There's a profile on a woman named Alejandra Cruz, who was a direct provider, had a terrible experience, walked away, became a costume designer, came back and does like community building stuff.
Amazing.
And we have Bettina May with a short erotic story that comes with some pinup photos.
Cool.
That she shot herself. My friend Hart from Tumblr wrote like a real life sexy bit.
Cool.
And then we have a video of Apneatic doing like vaguely ASMR stuff while
Great.
I whisper excerpts from another supervert piece, and then all the way through to like Around the World in 80 Ways with the hardcore with Lance Hart. And that's the scene that my editor Wolf had the intervention over with the honey you're a bottom.
Amazing.
So you can go to the website and see that in real time.
Great.
You can watch the awkwardness in the uncut.
I love that. Cool. Well, people should check that out. Oh, I guess one other thing that we should say while we're talking about books and reading and writing and literature as sexual, even if like the content is not necessarily like strictly sexual, is the fetish object of the book, which you've like alluded to with the bookshelf, but also the idea of like how things have changed where people are reading more and more on devices and screens. There are some of us who are like sticklers for the like physical fetish object of a book and how like a dusty old paperback smells.
I love the smell of old bookstores.
Yeah, man.
I have a perfume. It's the only perfume I wear that smells vaguely like a dusty bookstore.
Oh,
and like sometimes people are like, you smell like my grandma. And I'm like, I know. I smell like old paper. It's great.
Oh my God.
And there's one of the things that I've noticed in the past few years with so many people reading iTunes or Kindle or whatever.
Yeah.
Is it seems like publishers are putting more effort into the object again.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
If they're going to do a printed book, like, they actually, like, give it a nice cover. Well, and, like, there's a texture. That's a nice,
optimistic way of looking at it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, if you're going to do it, fucking do it.
Yeah, do it right.
Yeah.
So, like, my book, it kind of feels like a high-end sex toy.
Nice. And the name of your book, again, is Philosophy, Pussycats, and Porn.
Yes.
Awesome.
Because it talks about all three vaguely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
The philosophy is actually the least relevant thing.
Or it's sort of a through line.
Yeah. There's cats all over.
Nice.
There's something like calming about it.
Totally.
Because you develop this habit of like reading for yourself, reading to relax, reading to unwind. And then the act of like picking up a physical book has this like Pavlovian kind of like, you're like, oh, like I'm here to focus.
Totally.
Which for me is huge because ADHD. So I'm like, a thing that helps me focus. I love it.
Yeah. Good point. I mean, I don't like screens. I do like the smell of books. Like, you know, it totally like makes me feel like I'm going into my own world and like escaping from my troubles for a while in a way that feels like very like deep and old. It's like the most ancient thing that I can think of in terms of my lifetime, you know. There is also just that reading on a device is like, this is the thing that I work on and pay my bills on and that my mom calls me on. That doesn't make me feel relaxed at all.
No, definitely not.
Make me relaxed.
Yeah.
Yeah, so and on a book, like nobody can get at you.
Yes, there's no text message window popping up over top of the first two sentences on the page. That clearly irritates me.
Yeah. So what are some books that turn you on?
I think my absolute favorite is Lara Antonio's The Reunion.
Oh, yeah.
It is the best.
Friend of the pod. My second... third guest actually.
I adore her. Like, yeah. I'm like such a huge fan.
Same.
Someone reached out a few years ago with the idea to do the marketplace as a porno.
Oh, God.
And I was like, I'm going to check this book out. And I read the book and I was like, I love this book.
It's so good.
Nobody has the budget to do it justice with full sex.
Yeah.
And it would need to have the full sex to make sense. Like, you couldn't do a TV show without showing the sex. It would have to be for HBO.
Yeah.
But, like, I feel like this needs to happen.
Who's going to make that happen?
Any producers want to get in touch? I'd love to direct.
Oh, my God. Have you directed before?
I've directed porn.
Yeah, yeah.
But not anything narrative.
Cool. I believe in you. I think you could do it. So for those who are not familiar... The marketplace is, erotic literature sort of in the vein of Story of O, in the sense of there being this, like, isolated manner where consensual erotic BDSM sex slaves are taken to train, but then there's also this, like, whole marketplace, imagined when people are trained, then they can be, like, given... Or sold to masters or mistresses or households.
She makes capitalism sexy.
Yeah.
She's eroticized, like, the main oppressive force in our lives. It's brilliant.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah. And she's extremely queer and extremely kinky. And so, you know, even though there's, like, lots of different kinds of of permutations of people, it definitely has a very leather queer approach.
The thing that's really notable and like most starkly in the reunion compared to all other erotic literature that I've read.
Yeah.
She talks about the psychology of it.
Yeah.
Like she deals with all the variety of reasons that people are attracted to BDSM.
Yes.
And the emotional experience of it.
Yeah.
In a way that's like, just like nobody's touched on from any direction.
Yeah. We won't even deign to mention some of the things that Laura Antoniou's work surpasses in every way.
Yes.
If you are like looking for somebody who lives and understands that and is not just trying to like use it as a metaphor for really boring shit, check out all the Marketplace books. She also wrote this extremely funny book called The Killer Wore Leather. We talked about this
last time, right?
Which is like actually a very good, funny sort of caper murder mystery that takes place at a leather convention and is just like, if you have been to leather conventions, you will be like, I feel so seen and also skewered, but like in a nice way. Satire is the sincerest form of flattery, right? But then if you've never have been and you want to know what it is actually really like from someone who has been to a million of them and like has been to enough of them that they are like ready to position themselves as like the cranky person who is like making fun of it lovingly, then Killer Wore Leather, highly recommend. And super hot. I love like sex scenes within genre stories.
Yes. Yeah. It's the thing that a lot of erotica is missing is the context.
Right.
Like it's just like, oh, like here's some people boning. It's just, I don't know. I guess my body's responding.
Yeah.
Shrug.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Does that feel like the difference between something that is like just designed as like a body genre to like make your body respond so that you can like get aroused and get off versus something that also that like stimulates your body and other abstract parts of you as well?
So I have like a significant amount of arousal non-concordance.
Oh, interesting. Where, like, oh, talk about that.
The book for this is Emily Nagoski's Come As You Are.
Hell yeah.
And she talks about a few really awesome concepts. The brakes and accelerator system for how desire happens. The sleepy hedgehog metaphor. Mm. Your feelings are a sleepy hedgehog in your lap and you want to be gentle with your sleepy hedgehog and just let it like chill there until it's ready to wake up.
Yeah. Because it's like cute and spiky.
Yeah. And another thing she talks about is arousal non-concordance. And there was a study done a few decades ago where they showed men and women all these various video clips, like some not sexual at all, some like porn, some nature of like bonobos banging it out. Mm. And they also measured genital response, like things like blood flow. And they had the people self-report what aroused them and compared it to what their genitals said.
Interesting.
Men have approximately 50% overlap. Mm. Women have like 20% or something, like insanely low.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So what are some of the conclusions of that?
Gosh, it's so weird that our bodies and our brains are on completely different pages so often.
For example, if you have, what is it called? Arousal?
Non-concordance.
Non-concordance. You might watch something and think, that's hot. But, like, you don't necessarily get wet.
Right. Like, you'll be like, I'm so turned on right now, but my pussy is, like, not particularly involved.
Interesting.
Or, oh, my God, my body's going nuts, but, like, I don't really want this right. I guess I'll go have an orgasm to shut it up. Mm. But, like, I'm not, like, stoked. Like, I'm, like, trying to get through my work day, and I just happen to handle a lot of pornography.
I'm so interested in studies like that, in, like, the variables with them, because my arousal response to watching a video in a lab would be really different from my arousal response with a person or in private or when I'm not being, I mean, you know, the like exhibitionism and voyeurism at play.
Oh, I have a whole plan for this.
Oh yeah, hit me.
But it would take an immense amount of resources. So in theory, a large content provider could have people self-disclose what they're into.
Yeah.
they could mark each video with like, this happens at this time point,
mm-hmm.
then track what people are watching.
Yeah.
And compare what they're actually viewing and when they stop viewing, whether they move on to another video or leave the site, in which case we can presume that they've had an orgasm, like they've got what they came for and are satisfied.
Yeah.
And I think,
data,
with that kind of data tracking, we could have like blow the Kinsey study out of the water.
Yeah.
Because it's really hard for people to self-report.
Well, right. And then there's like the correspondence or concordance of how people think of themselves sexually versus what their actual arousal response patterns are. And then if there's a discordance between how they think of themselves and how their body is actually responding, that can also cause distress and shame, which then gets tangled up in the arousal, especially when it comes to watching erotic media and masturbation and just doing things that maybe people have been raised to think is unnatural or pathetic or wrong, or that they have the wrong idea and they assume that all porn involves exploiting people. So they like feel guilty, like, oh, I'm like really into this, but like someone was harmed in the making of this. And so now I feel like, you know, there's just like, I'm no doctor, but I feel like there's a lot of things that complicate this data.
Yes.
Which doesn't mean that it's not worth considering, especially it sounds like, you know, reading Come As You Are and reading about those studies also helps you to understand or put in context some things that you've noticed about yourself.
Absolutely. And it
gives you a framework.
You know, a lot of my job now is people bringing me their sex problems.
Right, because you do the column How to Do It.
Yes.
On Slate.
But also, like, they bring that stuff to my Instagram DMs and, like, all over the place. And I'm like, hey, I got the whole call. You could just write into the, and then I'd answer and get paid, and that's cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, any new sex or sexuality book, I'm always like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. I'm so excited. What am I going to learn here?
Nice. 'Cause,
like, it might be useful going forward.
So what is the difference for you between the experience of reading fiction that either is, like, erotic fiction, like a Laura Antoniou book, or literature that happens to have sex scenes in it? Some better than others, obviously. Some erotica is better than others as well, and also subject to taste. So what is the difference for you between, like, reading erotic fiction that is, like, telling a story and maybe has, like, a scene and characters that are erotic or arousing versus, like, reading a nonfiction book about sexuality?
So way back in puberty times, I had a bit of an instructional library, and there was this one specific book called The Guide to Getting It On, and there are some issues with this book.
Yeah, we were talking about that off mic already, but I want you to tell your story about it.
There are issues with all of these, like, even the books we're putting out now, like, there's something, or, like, I'm sure my book is incredibly critiquable. Like, there's always an issue. But the specific issue with Guide to Getting It On is they spend inches of paper, like more than an inch thick, talking about the parts and kissing and digital stimulation and oral stimulation. And then they have this one chapter, and it's very short, and it's practically at the end. I think it's just before the part where they talk about differently abled sex and, like, how to navigate that.
Sure.
And they're just like, so, like, some people are really into, like, BDSM and fetish, and here's kind of a cursory tour. And I would read it over and over and let my mind fill in the blanks. And, like, I'm like, ooh, like, there's this whole world that they're mentioning that, like, I just got to find, like, an entry point into. And that's what I would masturbate to.
Cool. Well, you know, I'm so glad that you brought that up, because You know, I've always had a problem with this book, Guide to Getting It On. And part of the reason is that it's in every sex positive sex toy store. I'm sure a lot of people listening have seen it or own it or have read it, or it was like the first book that they picked up. I mean, the marketing of it is very smart because it's like the modern version of the joy of sex, like for a lot of people in many ways, right?
Yeah.
I just remember like when I read it, I was like really, I think I was like in my early 20s when I read it, and I was so excited to read something that I thought was going to, like, I mean, part of it is that I went in with the expectations that it would like be a corrective for a lot of bullshit or like lack of comprehensive education, and I just found it to be so shamey, especially the section that you're talking about kink. It, like, you know, is very much like safari parachuting in and like being like, ugh, like some people are into this like really freaky shit, not me and not you, dear reader, obviously. And there's no campiness or winkiness to it. I'm like putting camp on it that it doesn't deserve. As a kinky person and somebody who was like looking for information, cultural context, and you know, even like the promise of more community and you know, finding compatible people, it was hurtful, you know, because it's like you expect that from middle school sex ed, and you expect it from religious leaders, and you expect it from parents or whatever, but then there's like supposedly this person that's like the cool guide to getting it on, and then they're like, yeah, this shit is like really freaky for people who are probably really sick. So like that has made me always actually like really hate that book. Also, the guy who wrote it is a total fucking troll on Twitter. So fuck him.
Oh, that's good to know.
Yeah. So I would not promote him or his work. But sometimes problematic fucked up shit is really hot, especially when you're really young and you don't have access to other things. And maybe the fact that it was like, here's this sick, freaky, twisted shit, you're like, I'm the weirdo, mister.
Yeah. I encountered that, and I was like, yeah, sick, twisted, weirdo shit. That's what I'm into. Where are the sick, twisted weirdos at? Yeah. And then it took a good...
Did you find them, Stoya?
I did. I found them. I fucked them. I fawned over them.
And now you're a beacon of light for
it
all
was
the weirdos out there.
It was a process. I mean, it's still in process of like 20 years of undoing that particular framing and going like, oh, I'm not weird. Yeah. I'm a normal human.
Totally.
It turns out the broad spectrum of human desire is so much more interesting and diverse and detailed than like anyone wanted to think about 20 years ago.
Totally.
And so I'm like I'll still occasionally be like, I've found my freaks.
Yes.
And then it's like, wait, are we sure about that word? Like, that word might be...
Well, it's like any other reclaimed word, right?
Yeah.
If it's been used to oppress you, then it's yours to reclaim.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Yeah. I'm here to validate that for you.
Awesome. It's like a therapy session.
Listen, secretly, that's what I'm out here doing. Not so secretly. The secret's out. The cat, the pussycat is out of the bag.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like, a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Are there works of literature, like canonical literature, that you find really hot, either because they have great sex scenes in them, or maybe there's something about them that you found hot that is, you know, a little bit more like fetishistic, like not strictly dickly?
I was never much of a literature person.
Interesting.
Like, I read the, like, required stuff. Like, it was like, okay, like, I slogged through The Scarlet Letter.
Did that turn you on?
No.
Interesting.
That made me feel like really icky.
Yeah.
Because it's a book about slut shaming.
Yeah.
Why do we require our school children to read a book about slut shaming?
You be the judge and jury. Yeah. I could definitely see someone eroticizing that, right? Like twisting it around and being like, yeah, punish me for being a slut.
But that doesn't work for me at all.
It's interesting.
Like, I'm like wail on my ass because I like it.
Yeah, yeah.
Like that's...
Yeah.
Like, I never want to be like in trouble or like...
Interesting.
Like that makes me like seize up and go dry. Like, there's definitely like the genre fiction, like sci-fi and fantasy gets like really racy.
Yeah,
there's,
yeah.
There's Andre Norton and Mercedes Lackey's book about the elf. I can't remember the name of it now. I can't believe I can't remember the name of it.
That sound you hear is the sound of furious Googling. Yeah. Furious future Googling when people listen to this.
But it was like, I loved that book, and there were very erotic parts about it. Maybe I just like the way Mercedes Lackey writes sex, because I'm also thinking about the one about the musician, and then she meets this guy, and like they have sex on a rock. I wore that page out. They have sex on a rock by a river, and the rocks are tearing up her back.
Oh yeah.
And yeah, I just like that one really worked for me for a while too. Nice. When Guide to Getting It On and Dan Savage weren't available.
Do you know Sam Delaney?
Yes.
Sam Delaney is like peak sci-fi raunch.
I've only read Times Square Red, Times Square Blue.
Great book.
And Bread and Wine.
Oh yeah, erotic comics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But like the strangest, sweetest erotic comic.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's still with that person.
I should read his sci-fi stuff.
Oh, yeah. No, his sci-fi is really amazing and often very erotic. But he also has just written these, like, truly disgusting books. And by, you know, disgusting is a, you know, high praise for me. Like this book, Hog, that is just like... It's just every taboo that you can think of. And he's just so gleeful and, I don't know, Sam Delaney has this, like, benevolence about him. Like, as a presence, I've, like, definitely, like, gone, I saw him speak at St. Mark's here in New York, and I, like, gave him a DVD of a porn that I had directed, which is queer and has a lot of people in it. I'm sure a lot of people you know, but it has a naked picture of Arabelle Raphael on the cover.
Okay.
And I like gave to him and I was like, you are my like porno hero. You know, here's some queer porn that I made. And he was like, oh, I'm very fond of lesbian stories. And I was like, oh, I want to explain to you that this DVD has people other than lesbians in a lot of ways, but also that is the most amazing thing that you could possibly have said to me. Thank you for gifting me with that story. Sam Delaney, I'm going to get out of your hair now. Yeah, what a great guy. And yeah, he just like has such a presence of benevolence, but I feel that like through his work.
Yes.
You know, through his work that he made before I was born, you know?
Yeah.
And he's still making it.
Times Square Red, Times Square Blue, one turned me on.
Oh, yeah. I mean, get out of here.
Like, really showed me what sex positivity is.
Yeah.
The way he talks about all these things, the porn theaters, the sex happening in them, the hustlers, the rent boys, the way that that's so flexible in that community, or at least was at the time. My mind is blown. Yeah. Like, this is a better way to talk about sex and sexuality.
100%. And also is such an important document of what that culture can mean and what a tragedy it is to colonize and gentrify it and like literally Disneyfy that. And when we talk about like cleaning up Times Square or like, you know, being hard on crime, like part of what we're talking about is gentrifying sexual spaces and queer spaces and sex work spaces.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not saying that everything that ever happened in Times Square was always, I'm not saying that abuse was not going on. Freedom doesn't promise freedom from abuse. It's still worth
my psychiatrist
protecting.
Says it's not Disneyland. But like as adults, we should have the right and spaces to go to take risks.
Yes.
And like we're not 18 we've had enough time to like practice risk and find out where our comfort zone is, find out how comfortable we are stretching out of it. And like as adults, we have the right to go to spaces that are safe for risk.
Or that are set up to, that set us up the best for taking risks because it's worth it.
Right.
Yeah. That's very, that's wise. You have a good psychiatrist.
He's great.
Good job.
I adore him.
Thanks for sharing that wisdom. It's also nice to know that there are therapists out there who are giving good advice, because there's a lot of them that are pathologizing us.
Yeah, I've had good luck. I found my first therapist that I saw more than like one time through Persist.
Oh, awesome.
Which I don't know if they're around anymore.
They were integrated into the Red Umbrella Project and I think have been on like indefinite hiatus. But a lot of the people who worked with both Red Up and Persist Health Project have moved on to other kinds of activist work, like the Anti-Violence Project and Hacking and Hustling, and the legacy of those orgs lives on in the sex worker rights movement, including Decrim New York, which just announced yesterday that they're gonna try to fucking make it happen. Anyway,
That makes me so hot. Like I have literal goosebumps right now.
I know.
It would be amazing to live in a state where prostitution is decriminalized, where sex work is decriminalized.
Yeah.
It would be huge.
Yeah, there's so much. That's like only the first step too. There's like so much work to be done around it. Yeah. It would be really fucking exciting.
But like that first step 5 years ago would have told you, I don't expect to see it within my lifetime.
Totally.
And now I'm like, we might see it next year.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. People get really hung up on bad sex scenes in books. Why do you think that writing sex scenes is so difficult? Why do you think people are so quick to judge them?
Probably because of the lack of sex ed.
Yeah.
People have this idea that if it doesn't make them hard or wet, then it's bad.
Totally.
And we see that all the time with porn. You're like, this porn sucks. And you're like, why does it suck? And you're like, well, it didn't make my dick hard. And I'm like, well, you're making an objective judgment based on subjective experience.
Totally.
Also, there's a whole big company that I'm not going to name that probably has what you want. Why are you bothering me?
Yeah, totally.
But
it's like people are offended.
They get really aggressively offended.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, they're like, you're terrible. And it's like, you could move on to the next thing. Like, it's not, nobody's forcing you. And so I think that definitely comes into play.
I think you're right.
And I think a lot of these bad sex scenes come from people wanting to be edgy or even wanting to include sexuality because it is part of the human experience.
Yeah.
But being really uncomfortable about it because we still don't have that many spaces to really discuss sex. And like, sex people write sex good.
Yeah. We sure do.
Yeah. And like people who aren't, they don't spend that much time around sexuality or like having sex with more than their one long-term monogamous partner.
Yeah.
They don't write sex so good because they don't have as much practice.
Well, it's so crazy how like it shuts off people's fucking imaginations or their craft and their ability, like things that they would apply if they were writing a fight scene.
Nicholson Baker, House of Holes.
Oh, ooh, I love the name.
Yeah. He's this like straight.
I identify as a House of Holes.
Straight white cis dude. Wrote a whole book that's just, it's literature, but it's this bizarre sexual romp.
Ooh, great.
You enter the House of Holes through a hole, a dryer or a straw or like any hole can be a portal. And then you're in this bizarre fantasy land where like dicks can be traded and like somebody, the main villain, steals people's clitorises.
Ooh.
Yeah. And he really seems like he's just like an average dude.
Yeah.
Who just happened to write like a whole book of really awesome sex scenes that were done well.
It's interesting. I feel like part of the reason that it's like people are afraid to write good sex scenes. Again, like whether it's a book that has a name like House of Holes that is like clearly meant to be like, you know, a one page read, as they say, right? Or like, you know, erotica, like the prose version of pornography, mm-hmm. or something that's more akin to like a feature film with a sex scene, right? Like literature that like stands on its own as a book, but then like has scenes where, as people do, they have sex or they masturbate or they think about sex or talk about it or talk about sexuality. I feel like people are hesitant to write about sex well because it's so exposing or like makes them so vulnerable that they would, that they're like embarrassed to admit that they like sex and that they think about it in creative and interesting ways. So they like put up this defense where they're like, I'm going to be really boring and unimaginative about this sex because otherwise people will know what is on my mind. And then of course also like censorship is a real thing. And sometimes people don't write about sex explicitly because they want to be able to distribute their book or get a publisher or get it in bookstores or get it reviewed. Sometimes people will just flat out not publish something because the sex in it made them uncomfortable.
Yes.
It's a rumor that I've
heard. We almost didn't get Philosophy, Pussycats, and Porn on the Kindle store because of the word porn in the title.
Wow. Yeah. Just because porn is a word in the title.
Yeah. The publisher went to work on them and they eventually rolled over. But there was like a week where I was like biting my nails, like, ah, I should have gone with a different title.
Would you have changed the title to get it published?
I would have.
Yeah.
Because,
better to get it out there. Because there's a ton of porn in the book, but they like want to.
Yeah. And I would have like kept myself up at night wondering like, what if someone doesn't realize there's going to be that much porn in there and like buys it thinking it's about philosophy and cats and then is really surprised.
Yeah, it does what it says on the tin.
Yeah. So I guess there would have been issues either way. I wonder what the original manuscript looked like with those kind of scenes. Like I'm curious what the editing process was like, what got removed.
Right, is it self-censorship or is it an editor? Is it a publisher? Is it a distributor? You know, because you know from making porn on many different levels that like sometimes the person that is dictating the what you are allowed to show is the credit card company.
Yeah, Visa. It all goes back to Visa.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's not, you know, it's not like the porn star doesn't want to portray something. It's not like the director is not interested in something. It's not like the company doesn't want to show something or that the market isn't there. It's like you've got these corporate finance people being like, we're just going to make these arbitrary, broad, sweeping judgments on what is obscene. And a lot of the time it's like totally subjective to like what makes that person uncomfortable or feel threatened.
Which is not a functional guideline.
It sure is not. No. And is often very heteronormative and misogynistic and white supremacist and classist and a bunch of other fucked up things. And then those of us who are freaks and weirdos, you know, we have to think of ourselves as freaks and weirdos because we just want to get turned on and tell stories in the way that we want to do that and reach other people. Because all of this stuff, I mean, books are about humans connecting, right?
Absolutely.
Ultimately, that is the thesis of this podcast. Books are about connecting, even connecting with yourself.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The death of the author, the little death, fucking Stoya's body when she's gone.
And in the meantime, I have a fleshlight.
Oh, right. And you can go to fleshlight.com/Stoya.
This is nothing to do with books at all, but I'm so proud of myself because it was such a bizarre moment. The other week, I couldn't have sex. My partner was like, I've got a boner. I've got your fleshlight. Is it going to be weird if I fuck your fleshlight while you're here? And I'm like, I will do you one better. Oof. And I take the insert out of the plastic tube and I put it on his dick and I wrap both my hands around and I just start jerking him off. But I'm doing the squeezing thing too. I'm going to stop moving my hands in the jerking off motion because it's making the microphone bob around. So I'm jerking him off, and he's like, I'm fucking your pussy right now. And I'm like, this is the most narcissistic moment of my entire life.
Actually very sweet and giving, to be honest. And meta. And and not something that everyone could do, because not everyone has a mold of their cunt to
wrap around someone's pulsing, throbbing cock. Yeah.
That is really sweet. As somebody who doesn't have an attached cock, I always wonder, like if I had one and I was going to, like, fuck a different fleshlight, like, could I take the Pepsi challenge, you know? Could I, like, stick my dick in, like, various fleshlights and be like, that's Stoya?
Oh, I wonder. I don't think so, because all the fleshlight girls have different textures.
Oh, yeah.
So if you had sensation in the phallus, you probably could, after a certain point, like, figure out, like, this is this one and that's that one. I have such penis envy over the whole thing
that I've
actually thought about cutting one in half and, like, dry humping it, wet humping. Oh. I would want lube for that.
Yeah. Oh, that's nice.
I've considered it. I should.
They should send you one just for that.
Okay, I've got a fucking pile of them.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Well, you can spare one.
Yeah.
I mean, you should obviously do that with your own. Also, like, fucking your own pussy. Get out of here. The feedback loop. Come on. Should do it. You should, like, do it for charity and, like, raise money for Decrim New York.
Build like a 3-panel mirror set.
Great.
And then hump it in front of the mirrors, but also have a mirror on the floor.
Yeah.
And just shoot from, like, a top angle into the whole thing, and then put it up. I don't know what platform aside from Zero Spaces would want that, but yeah, put it on Zero Spaces and be like, whatever percent goes to, all right, I just need someone to build me a mirror corner.
There's so many things that we're asking for from,
but we have a million projects. We're generating
a lot of fucking ideas. It's good. That sounds really hot. I'll add.
Yeah. Great.
I would watch.
Awesome.
Cool. Anything else that you want to say about books?
I love books.
They love you back.
I love people who love books, generally.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, we at least have a starting point for conversation.
Yeah, I mean, it's really, we didn't need to say anything else. That's really what it's all about.
We've talked about so many great sex books, and if you have recommendations that we didn't touch on, then hit me up on Twitter, because I'm always looking for good sex books.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. That's my real request. Great. Let us know what your favorite sex book is.
Recommendations.
Yes.
Have you ever fucked in a library?
I have not.
Well, that needs to.
I know.
That needs to happen.
Yeah, I've, like, done, like, a porno on a library set.
Yeah.
But it's not the same.
Haven't we all?
Yeah. Yes. Who hasn't done a library porno?
Yeah, but yeah, getting railed in the stacks.
I wonder if it's worth the risk of the headline, porn star thrown out of New York Public Library for obscene behavior.
It previously fucked a corpse. Porn star. Yeah. I mean, you know, there's the whole public thing and consent and, you know, not, you know, but I actually, my college boyfriend worked in the library, and
did you get to do it after hours?
I sure did.
Oh, I'm so jealous.
Yeah, it was really, it was everything I knew it would be and more.
Amazing.
Yeah. I had to be very quiet.
Of course. You're in the library. You've got to be quiet in
the fucking library. Shh. Okay. Well, on that note, Stoya, people can find you on the internet, on Twitter.
At Stoya on Twitter, at Stoya on Instagram, hellostoya.com, which I barely post on ever.
That's a good hub for a lot of your stuff.
Yeah, like if I'm doing something, then I'll, like, put up a thing that's like, hey, I've put out a book, or, like, whatever.
And ongoing on Slate is How to Do It,
yes,
column. And you have a book club here in Brooklyn.
It's called Sex Lit at the Gemini Scorpio Loft.
Love it.
Yeah.
And if people want to support you and your work, what's the best way to do that?
I get royalties from my book and from Fleshlight.
Cool.
Zero Spaces, you know, we sell individual issues and individual video clips.
Cool.
In theory, we'll get up to subscription at some point, but, like, if you...
I know, it's a la carte.
Yeah, if you buy something on Zero Spaces, that goes right back into the budget to make more awesome content.
Cool.
Yeah.
Great. Well, I'm a huge fan, and it's really nice to just hang out and giggle about things that we like, and I'm really quite honored to have you on the show. Thank you for sharing your disgusting, weird, wonderful mind.
I'm honored to be on the show. I'm like, oh my god, Tina Horn's podcasting from my apartment.
Well, surrounded by all of your books. Well, that mutual appreciation, that makes me feel really great.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks so much for being here.
You've been listening to Why Are People Into That, produced and hosted, as always, by yours truly, Tina Horn. If you want to support 5 years and counting of Indie Pervert Media, check out the show's Patreon. That's patreon.com/TINAHORN. Please, take a little time to write us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen, and keep telling your friends about the show. It really means the world to me. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Tina Horns S for updates on live shows, workshops, and everything else I'm up to in and out of clothes. Our music is by Vivid Windows from Oakland, California. Thanks for tuning in. See you next time.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.